My guest Jeffrey Wright is in three current films. He plays Colin Powell in W, a CIA agent in Quantum of Solace, and he stars in the new movie Cadillac Records as blues guitarist and singer Muddy Waters. Cadillac Records is based on the story of the Chess record label, which released now classic recordings by Muddy Waters, Chuck Berry, Etta James, and Willie Dixon. Wright starred in the 1996 film Basquiat as the artist Jean-Michel Basquiat. He won awards for his performances in the stage and screen productions of Angels in America, and more recently was in the film Syriana and Broken Flowers. In Cadillac Records, Jeffrey Wright does his own singing. Here he is as Muddy Waters on a recording from the film's soundtrack.
Gypsy woman told my mother before I was born, you got a boy child coming, he gonna be a son of a gun, he gonna make pretty women jump and shout, then the world wanna know.
Jeffrey Wright, welcome to Fresh Air. Is this the first time you've sung in a movie?
Yes. And I thought it was critically important to this portrayal that I sing, that we all sing, because the expression of character and culture through the music is very direct, has an immediate relationship to the people who created this music. So it was an entry point for me into the character and the lives of Muddy Waters.
So what did you do to try to get Muddy Waters' voice?
Well, I grew up in Washington, D.C., but I spent a lot of time in the South, in Southern Virginia, in North Carolina. My grandparents were from the Tidewater area of Virginia, my maternal grandparents, and my grandfather was a waterman, oysterman, crabber. I also had a few acres that he farmed, you know, where he grew corn and okra and, you know, butter beans or lima beans, all, you know. And then he would, you know, when that was done, he would come back and he would sell his wares, and they were, you know, there was liquor as well. And there was, he was a very magnetic character, so the people just kind of gathered around him and around the house. So just a constant flow of language and story I was always just intrigued by the language, by the poetry, and the personalization of language. So to discover Muddy Waters for me was, there are things specific to his voice, obviously, but as well, it was just a journey back into my familial past.
So it's interesting that at the same time you're playing Muddy Waters, you played Colin Powell in the movie W. And, you know, they're both, your performances are both based on real people, one living, one dead, and two people who are really different from each other. You've done a bunch of characters who are real. I mean, you played Jean-Michel Basquiat, the artist, in Basquiat. It seems like there would be very specific kind of responsibilities and pressures when you're playing a character that's based on the real person.
Well, I have done a fair amount of non-fictional roles. You know, I guess each of these roles has had a different purpose for me. With Basquiat, he was an artist who was relatively unknown outside of, you know, certain circles, and so the idea to bring his story, his life, his death, and his work to a wider audience was attractive for me. With Muddy Waters, there's a similar impetus, I think, because I don't think there's a full appreciation for the specifics of who he was and what his contribution to American and world culture was. So the idea that we could, just push a friendly reminder out there of who these people were and what their contribution was attractive to me. With the POW situation, there was the idea was that, you know, maybe we could add our 2 cents worth to the political discourse prior to the election. So that was exciting. It's, you know, the idea of actor as responsible citizen or something. Actors tend to be generally pretty useless, but when we can use our work to be relevant to the times, we gain an iota of legitimacy.
One of your breakthrough roles was in Angels in America, which you played on Broadway, and you got 3 awards for that, including a Tony. And then you played the same role in the HBO series a few years ago of Angels in America, and you got an Emmy for that. And Angels in America is set during the height of the AIDS epidemic, and you play someone named Belize. Why don't you describe your character?
Well, Belize is a retired drag queen turned nurse, and as the play unfolds, he becomes the caretaker of Roy Cohn, who's kind of the embodiment of late 80s decadence and denial and latency, and all wrapped up in a veneer of arch conservatism. So,
and he was also Joe McCarthy's chief counsel during the anti-communist crusades.
Right. So it makes for a great marriage, Roy Cohn and a retired drag queen.
So in those scenes where you as the nurse Belize is taking care of a still closeted Roy Cohn who's dying of AIDS, what was it like to work with Al Pacino, who played Roy Cohn in the HBO adaptation of the play? I mean, this is kind of like Pacino in a way we haven't seen him before, you know, with sores on his face, being like at death's door, weakened by AIDS, and being really kind of bitter. Do you want to talk about like working with Pacino on those scenes and how his process compared to your process for getting into character?
It was a very interesting process. For me, I'd done the play on Broadway for 1.5 years, 7-hour play. So I'd kind of gone over pretty much all of the various choices there and had settled on some that I wasn't going to yield from. I had a lot of rehearsal. Al hadn't. So what he liked to do was call rehearsals absent of Mike Nichols, the director, or anyone else. He would get a space somewhere in Midtown and, you know, get a call and say, "Al wants to rehearse. Come on over." And so we'd go over and we'd just rehearse by ourselves. This was, you know, a couple months before we started to shoot, and we did it, regularly. He called so much so that I started to realize that he would rather rehearse than shoot. It was really about the journey for him. the camera was optional, but it was about his mining the character and the story and trying to, to get at, the essence of the thing, which is what you have an opportunity to do in theater. And so Al took it upon himself to give himself that space by rehearsing over and over, outside of, what Mike Nichols had wanted. I found that really interesting.
Well, I'd like to play a scene from the HBO adaptation of Angels in America. And this is a scene toward the end. You're with Roy Cohn, you're his nurse. He's very close to death in this scene. And you walk in and he's so like disoriented and a little bit delusional because of the AIDS that he doesn't recognize you. He doesn't know who you are.
Who am I, Roy?
Oh, the Negro night nurse. My negation. Come to escort me to the underworld. Come on.
You want me, Roy? Want me to take you away?
Oh, God, I'm ready.
I'll be coming for you soon. Everything I want is in the end of you.
Can I ask you something, sir?
Sir.
What's it like after?
After?
This misery ends.
Hell or heaven? Like San Francisco.
A city. Good. I was worried it'd be a garden. I hate that.
Big city. Overgrown with weeds, but flowering weeds. On every corner, a wrecking crew, and something new and crooked going up catacorner to that. Windows missing in every edifice like broken teeth. Gritty wind, and a gray high sky full of ravens.
That's my guest, Jeffrey Wright, with Al Pacino from the HBO adaptation of Tony Kushner's Angels in America. Had the AIDS epidemic affected you personally? Did you lose many friends to it?
I started acting in college, and there was a young guy who was a year behind me, who, director, who reshaped Wallace Terry's novel Bloods into a night of monologues, and that was my, you know, my first gig. His name was Kevin Frazier. Died of AIDS. The first job that I got in New York after coming to New York was a play at Yale Repertory Theater. A director and teacher up there named Dennis Scott hired me. He died of AIDS. There was a wonderful teacher that I had at NYU named Paul Walker, who taught games and poetry, and just an extraordinary muse who I visited in the hospital. And he was unrecognizable, died of AIDS. So, yeah.
Well, it sounds like it hit you pretty hard.
Yeah, sorry. I hadn't thought about that. So, yeah, so there were many people, particularly who affected my life as an actor, who had suffered from this disease. So, yeah, it was very personal, very personal.
Did you have somebody who you could pattern Belize on, somebody who, as you put it, was a retired drag queen?
No, but at the time I lived on the Upper West Side of Manhattan, but, I'd lived as well down in Greenwich Village, and I remember going down and just hanging out, in the clubs and hanging out with drag queens. And I remember, in fact, there was one named Gerlina who I hung out with for a fair amount of time before, as I was studying the physicality of the character. And I remember, in fact, the night before we performed, I had a dream, and she came to me in this dream, and it was kind of an anointing or approval or something like that. And I just went around and studied folks, but it was very difficult to wear those stilettos at times, to wear those shoes, because I'm not going to say that I was the most evolved creature on the planet, and to kind of display this femininity was a bit of a struggle initially, and in fact, George Wolfe called me on a Sunday. I think we were supposed to start previews on a Tuesday, and he called me Sunday morning. He said, Jeffrey, it's not working. And I said, I know, George. I have two more days. It managed to work eventually, but I had to kind of strip away these things and, insecurities and all of those, all of that. And
how'd you do it? How'd you strip away those insecurities and allow yourself to lose some of your masculine part and get in touch with a more feminine part and a more gay part?
Yeah, well, it didn't work initially because I think I was trying to work from the outside in and kind of put on, you know, the externals first. But what I started to do was to ignore that side and focus on who Belize was as a caretaker, as a nurse, as someone who's lost friends, as someone who, you know, struggling through his day. And to focus on, you know, his the words that Tony had given me, and it was through the inside out that I was able to, you know, to craft the character and then apply the, you know, the gesture and the physicality once that had been established. And so it was a much more organic relationship to my body that I was able to create. And just eventually I lost my self-consciousness and was empowered by it.
So were the 2 days that you had remaining after George C. Wolfe's phone call enough time?
Well, yes. You know, those 2 days were enough in that there were, you know, 3 months prior to it. But, yeah, it was just those final 2 days that I needed to kind of round it out. And also, there's something that happens from rehearsal to performance, and particularly with this piece for me. It was, you know, I was young. I'd been acting you know, about 7 years. And it was really like the first time after, you know, we started doing this that I considered myself, yeah, I'm a real actor. So it was a real kind of, you know, kind of violent, you know, burst through, you know, the door, you know, from rehearsal into performance. And so, yeah, there was something that was revealed just by performing it that was not revealed in the rehearsal. You know, you do out of necessity. And so, yeah, it worked.
Jeffrey Wright, thanks so much for talking with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Jeffrey Wright stars in the new movie Cadillac Records as Muddy Waters. It opens Friday. You can also see him in Quantum of Solace and W. You can download podcasts of our show on our website, freshair.npr.org.